The following is a sermon from Haven Heights Baptist Church in Wauseon. At Haven Heights, we believe that faith comes through hearing and hearing through the word of Christ. As you listen to this sermon, we pray the Lord would use the preaching of his word to point you to Jesus and to strengthen your faith in him. If you're looking for a church home, we'd love for you to join us on a Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. For more information about our church, go to havenheightsbaptist.org or find us on Facebook. Go ahead and open to John chapter 9. And as you're turning there, I want you to just imagine with me for a moment that you are sleeping soundly in a room that is pitch black. It's got some sort of blackout curtains pulled over the windows, perhaps. And you've even gotten the chance to sleep in. If you have young kids like I do, I know this will be a stretch for your imagination, but just humor me here and just imagine the best you can. So you've slept in this pitch dark room and you are sound asleep when all of a sudden someone walks into the room and then violently rips the curtains open. And the bright sun comes flooding into the room, illuminating everything and falling upon your closed eyelids. Now there are two probable responses to this. I want to ask you which kind of person you are. But the first group of you, when the curtains are ripped open and the sunlight comes flooding in, you may kind of rub your eyes a little bit, kind of blink the sleep out, maybe open one eye, kind of look around, gradually open, blink a few times, sit up, and then look around the room. At the first group, we'll embrace the light. You'll see it. It might be bright at first, but you'll embrace it and you'll look around and see the whole room. That's the first group. The second group of people, when the curtains are flung open and the sunlight comes rushing in, might lay there, perhaps give a little groan, maybe rub their eyes a little bit before rolling over and then pulling the covers back over your head. That's a picture of what is going on in John chapter 9 this morning. So just a few weeks ago, Pastor Lance preached from John 8 about how Jesus is the light of the world. And in John 9, Jesus is continuing that same thought. It's taking place just shortly after he made that proclamation. And now in John 9, Jesus is going to demonstrate what it actually means that he is the light of the world. He's going to show that and show how people respond to it. And what we'll see that just like the sunlight rushing into the room in the morning, there are two responses. Some people will embrace the light and be given spiritual sight, and others, in their sin and rebellion, will pull the covers over their eyes, and they will reject the light. And we'll see both in John chapter 9 here. Because just a quick overview of this whole chapter. Yes, we're covering the whole chapter today. It's long, but it's all one story. So in the first section, we'll see Jesus address the issue of physical blindness. He will go to this blind man, and we'll see him heal the blind man. He addresses the physical blindness. Immediately after that, in the long middle section of John chapter 9, we will see Jesus engage with the Pharisees. I shouldn't say that. Jesus doesn't, but the blind man engages with the Pharisees. And we will see their spiritual blindness. So we see the man's physical blindness, we see the Pharisees' spiritual blindness, and then finally at the end, we see Jesus give spiritual sight to the blind man. So we will see physical blindness, and then spiritual blindness, and then spiritual sight. And what we'll ultimately see is that this blind man is really like a living, breathing parable for spiritual blindness and spiritual sight. And what Jesus is showing by healing this man of his physical blindness is what it means to come to him, what it means to have your eyes opened and be given spiritual sight. Well, as I said, the passage begins with Jesus confronting this man's physical blindness. So the interesting thing is that if you look right away in verse 1, you'll notice that this man doesn't go and seek out Jesus, but Jesus initiates the contact. There are other places in the Gospels where you see sick people seeking out Jesus and following after him. That's not the case here. It seems like Jesus is walking along with his disciples and they see the man, and then Jesus seeks him out. Right? Notice verse 1. He saw a man blind from birth. So they see the man, they initiate contact, and then his disciples ask him this question. Who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? So the disciples show us what an assumption of their day was. The assumption was that if a person was suffering, there must be sin that has resulted in that suffering. They assumed either this man himself sinned or that his parents had sinned, and that in response to their sin, God had inflicted this man with blindness. And that really is a question that we all ask at some point, is it not? Right, why did this happen? Why is this person suffering? Was there sin in his life that God would do this? So the disciples ask this question. Now, at first glance, it seems like Jesus doesn't ask the question because he doesn't go off on some long theological explanation here for why the man is blind. But I think he does answer the question, and he answers it very subtly. So just look at verse 3. So first he says, neither this man nor his parents sinned. He said, but this happens so that the works of God might be displayed in him. Now, this isn't the main point of the text this morning, but we have to address this, right? We have to see what Jesus says to this man and then to see what he says to us in our own suffering here. Okay, and I think there are three things that Jesus says in his answer about this suffering. So the first thing he says is that suffering is not a direct result of sin. Jesus says that right away. Neither this man nor his parents sinned. He says, you guys are thinking about this all wrong, right? God is not interested in some tit-for-tat game of revenge here. You do this, well, I'll inflict this upon you. You sinned, well, now you can have this instead. Here's this punishment. Okay, that's not the way God works, and Jesus says as much right here. Now, is there a general relationship between sin and suffering? Sure, we know that when Adam sinned, they brought suffering into the world, and so all suffering is a result of living in this fallen world. There's a connection there, but there's not a tight connection, not a direct connection. That's the first thing Jesus says. And so for you, if you're suffering at this moment, would you just know your suffering is not a direct punishment from God? Right? God does not play the tit-for-tat game of punishment. Okay, so that's the first thing. God is not petty. He doesn't offer up punishment instantaneously for sins. The second thing Jesus shows us is that this man's suffering is not outside of God's control. So Jesus doesn't say, well, it's just kind of the way this world is, and it's just too bad, you know? Blindness happens, and there's really nothing we can do about it. But no, they ask him, why did this happen? And Jesus said, this happened that. All right, that's an important little word, that. It implies purpose. It implies control. Jesus' answer isn't, well, there's really nothing God can do about it, but it implies purpose, control. God is the sovereign Lord over all creation. And so the world is not spinning out of control. This man's life is not spinning out of control. Your life is not spinning out of God's control. Right? So this man's suffering is not a direct result of sin. It's not out of God's control. And the third thing Jesus shows us is that this man's suffering was for the glory of God. Now, in this particular case, this particular man was, his suffering was for a very specific purpose, that Jesus could display his glory in that moment. But in a far more general sense, this is true for all of us. So Romans 8:28, for those who love God and are called according to his purpose, all things work together for good. Or 2 Corinthians 4:17, this light momentary affliction is preparing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison. And so the principle that Jesus says here to this man is the same for our lives, that God is using our suffering for his glory and for our eternal good. So those are the three answers Jesus gives to their question right there. This is not God's petty vengeance for sin. This is not outside of God's control. And rest assured, this has happened for this man's eternal good and for the glory of God. And so for us here this morning, if you are suffering and you found yourself asking why, wondering like Jesus' disciples, why did this happen? Why is this suffering here? Find comfort in Jesus' answer in John 9:3. Moreover, find comfort not just in his answer, but find comfort in his actual response. Jesus doesn't treat this man like a theological case study, but he treats him like a human being. With compassion, then he heals the man. This is not a guarantee that Jesus will heal our suffering here and now. What it is, though, is a display of Christ's compassion and his love and his character. So if you are suffering, find comfort in that here and now. So Jesus answers their question in these first few verses. And then in verse 4, he says, as long as it is day, we must do the works of him who sent me. Night is coming when no one can work. While I am in the world, I am the light of the world. So what Jesus is saying here is that this particular task has been given to him. Sure, there are other works to do, and God is always working in the world, but this particular task is for him to do, given to him by God. And what he means is that there is a special urgency. As long as the Son is in the world, in the flesh, walking on the earth, there is a special urgency to do the things God has given him to do. And so that's what Jesus is saying here. This is it. The task God has given to us right now in this moment is this. And then Jesus proceeds to spit in the mud, wipe it on the man's eyes, and then sending him away, commanding him to go wash in the pool of Siloam. And the result? For the first time in his life, verse 7, the man went and washed and came home seeing. And just like I asked the kids in that children's lesson, just imagine the joy when for the first time you can see another human being's face. When for the first time you can see a sunset. When for the first time you don't have to grope your way along a wall to find your way home. When for the first time you don't step in a hole because you can actually see where you're stepping. The man's sight has been restored. His physical blindness has been overcome. And this is a great miracle. But this is not the greatest miracle. Because right now in verse 8 then, and in the middle part of the passage, we will see people who have physical sight, but have a far greater problem. Spiritual blindness. So that's our second point. In verses 8 through 34, we see the spiritual blindness of the Pharisees. So when I worked at Chick-fil-A, we would get a fair amount of homeless people who would come into our store and either ask for food or even different homeless people who would come in and just sit there. And so long as it didn't cause any problems, we just let them sit there. And we would see the same people over and over again, and we would get to know them. We would know them by name. We would know what their problems are. We just got used to seeing them there, sitting in the corner every single day. Now, if one of them had showed up vastly different from before, we would have noticed. We never had a blind homeless person, but if there had been a blind homeless person who would sit in the corner of our store just sitting there blindly, and then one day that person had come into the store, just eyes open, looking up at the menu, trying to decide what he or she wants, we would have noticed. It would have been a big deal. There would have been a buzz in the store amongst us as workers and amongst even the other people, the regulars who were there who knew that person as well. Did you see that? Is that so-and-so who always sits in the corner? Yeah, that's her. What, wasn't she blind? Yeah, she was. Well, she's looking at the menu now. She just walked out the door without her walking stick. Right? It would have created this buzz, and that's what's going on here with this man. He comes back seeing, and all these people recognize him. Yeah, that's the guy who used to sit there and beg forever. That blind guy, you remember him. You walked past him all the time. Yeah, that's him walking around. What? But he's seen. Yeah, I know. Isn't that amazing? And so he's causing quite this buzz. The blind man sees, well, how did this happen? Who healed this man? Who ever heard of a blind man from birth being healed? And so there's this buzz around him. They're trying to figure out what's going on and what happened. Surely this is a work of God. And so this leads them to do what any of us would do. They take the man to the religious leaders of the day. One, probably to find answers. Help us understand what's going on here. You're the Pharisees. You know the Bible. What is this? How did this happen? And then two, probably just to share their excitement. Look at this. This is the work of God in our midst. You're the religious leaders. Look at this. This is amazing. And so they go and they take the man to the Pharisees. Well, have you ever been so excited about something that you couldn't wait to just share it with someone? And then you go and share it with that person, and they instantly assume the role of the fun police. And you were all excited, like, look, isn't this amazing? Look, I can't wait to share this with you. And then you share it, and they're just kind of like, well, yeah, but, you know, it's kind of what the Pharisees do here. There's this buzz, this excitement, and they take him to the Pharisees, and they're like, look, this is a work of God in our midst. Tell us what happened here. We're so excited. And they go ahead, man, tell them. You were the blind man. Tell the Pharisees. Tell what happened. Tell them all about it. So the blind guy was like, yeah, I was sitting there begging like I always do. And this guy comes up and they start talking about me. And then he just spits in the mud and he rubs in the dirt. And then they, whoa. We're going to stop you right there, okay? When did this happen? Well, just yesterday. And the Pharisees start to talk among themselves. It was yesterday. That was the Sabbath. Yeah. Okay, anyway, sorry. Continue with your story. So anyways, I was just sitting there, and the man spit in the mud. He made mud with his hand and his spit. Whoa. We're going to stop you right there again. You said he did. He did what? Yeah, he spit in the mud, and he made mud, then rubbed it on my eyes. And the Pharisees look at each other. Oh, yeah. It's just what we thought. Yeah, this man is not from God. I hate to tell you, I know you're excited, and that's great, you have your sight back, but this man is not from God, because he doesn't keep the Sabbath. Now, if you're anything like me, you read verses 14 through 16 there, where the Pharisees conclude that Jesus is not from God because he doesn't keep the Sabbath, and you're wondering, what on earth are they talking about? How is this a violation of the Sabbath? Well, let me tell you how. Here's how it was a violation of the Sabbath in their mind. So the Pharisees were experts in the law of Moses. So what they did is they would go back and look at the laws of Moses, which is a good thing. They would analyze the laws and they would try to figure out, what does this law mean? How do we abide by this law? How do we obey God in the fullest according to this law? Which again is a good activity. But what they would do is they would look at God's laws, they would analyze it, and they would end up making their own laws on top of God's law. They would add to the rules God had given. And so God says in his law, remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. Well, to the Pharisees, that gets interpreted as a list of 39 activities that were prohibited to do on the Sabbath. And you know what one of those prohibited activities was? Kneading, as in K-N-E-A-D-I-N-G, like bread. That was prohibited on the Sabbath, according to the Pharisees, because it was work. And so it seems that the Pharisees hear about Jesus spitting in the mud. And well, if you spit in the mud, what do you have to do to, you know, make it into mud? You kind of have to rub it in there a little bit. In other words, you have to knead it to make the mud. And so in the Pharisees' mind, they hear what Jesus has done on the Sabbath. He has spit and kneaded and healed this man. And he has committed a brazen and egregious violation of God's law. He can't be from God. And if you're sitting there thinking, well, that's silly, you're exactly right. It is silly. An extraordinary work of God has been done in their midst. A man born blind has been healed. The light of the world is shining right in front of them. How can they be so dull, so dumb? How can they be so blind? Because they have a far greater problem than the blind man. They have physical sight, but they are spiritually blind. What does it mean to be spiritually blind? The Pharisees show us here in this passage. The first thing they do is they demand all kinds of evidence from this man. And this isn't the kind of evidence that's seeking truth. They're seeking more evidence out of a hardness of heart. They're finding reasons to not believe. And there's a wealth of evidence in front of them. The man standing right there. Literally everybody is saying, this guy was blind from when he was born. His parents say that. The evidence is right there, and they're demanding more evidence. They ask again, so were your eyes really opened? Are you sure you were blind from birth? How did he do it again? For real, tell us the truth this time. honor God, right? Tell us the truth. We know that the facts don't add up here. Something's going on. And they continue to ask and press for evidence, refusing to believe the evidence that is right in front of them. Spiritual blindness always demands more evidence. There's a place for looking for evidence for Christianity. But if you are constantly seeking more and more evidence, if I only had more proof, then I would believe, that is a symptom of spiritual blindness. Spiritual blindness always demands more evidence. The second thing, spiritual blindness always refuses to acknowledge the facts, even when they're right in front of them. Like we said already, the man is standing right there. Everyone says he was born blind. Here he is seeing now. The facts are there. The Pharisees refuse to believe it. They simply can't believe the facts are true. There's got to be some kind of explanation here. I can't fathom that this man was blind, but now he sees. Spiritual blindness refuses to believe the facts, even when they're right in front of them. And the last thing we see about spiritual blindness is that spiritual blindness is a disease of the heart. So earlier in John chapter 3, something similar is going on here. And John 3:19 says this, "And this is the judgment. The light has come into the world, and people love the darkness rather than the light because their works were evil." So what John 3:19 says is that the light has come. The light of the world is here. It is Jesus. People rejected it. Why? Because they loved the darkness. Their hearts were darkened. It's an issue of the affections, the feelings of their hearts. Why does a sleeping person cover his eyes in the morning when the sunlight comes rushing in? He loves the darkness, and he hates the light. So it is with spiritual blindness. Spiritual blindness is a willful rejection of God in the heart. And that's what the Pharisees are doing. They're supposed to be these experts in the law, these experts of the Old Testament. They would have been familiar with passages like Isaiah 35 that we just read. You read Isaiah 35, and what does it tell about? It tells about this future time when God's Messiah will come. And when the Messiah comes, he will do things like open up the ears of the deaf and open up the eyes of the blind. And now the Messiah is here, actually doing that, opening the eyes of the blind, and the Pharisees, who know Isaiah 35, refuse to believe it. That is what spiritual blindness looks like, a willful rejection of God in their hearts. And if it seems foolish and illogical and even nonsensical, that's because it is. Spiritual blindness is ultimately foolish. Psalm 14:1, the fool says in his heart, there is no God. It's foolish, it's nonsensical, and it's the universal condition of mankind apart from Christ. All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. And so what's the solution to spiritual blindness? Only the light of the world who gives spiritual sight. And that's what we see in verses 35 through 41. In this final section, you see the spiritual blindness of the Pharisees contrasted now with the spiritual sight of this man. And so at this point, the former blind man still doesn't have spiritual sight, not quite yet. And so Jesus goes and finds the man, and then verse 35, he approaches this man and he says, "Do you believe in the Son of Man? Do you have spiritual sight?" Verse 36, the man responds. And just briefly, notice the difference between this man's response and the Pharisee's response. The man doesn't demand more evidence. He's not demanding more facts or refusing to believe the facts, but he is very willing to believe. He says, "Who is he, sir? Tell me so that I may believe in him." Verse 37, Jesus says, "You have now seen him. In fact, he is the one speaking with you." Then the man said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshiped him. Jesus has given the man spiritual sight. And so the man believes and he worships him. Because spiritual sight always leads to worship. Worship is the natural heart response to seeing Jesus for who he is. And when you are given spiritual sight to see Jesus for who he is, you can do nothing other than worship. Blind people don't stand in awe of the Grand Canyon. Not because the Grand Canyon isn't beautiful and majestic, but because they can't see it. When true beauty and majesty are encountered and seen, the natural heart response is awe. It's worship. Likewise, when the beauty and majesty of Christ are seen with spiritually open eyes, the natural heart response is awe and worship. And so if you have never experienced true, genuine, heartfelt worship that stirs your heart, that arouses your affections, that brings you to sing and declare the praises of God, could it be that you have never seen the glory of Jesus with spiritually open eyes? Could it be that you are spiritually blind like the Pharisees, knowing the facts, knowing the scriptures, knowing the truths in your head, but yet in your heart you are blind and darkened? Spiritual sight always leads to spiritual worship. And finally, this is contrasted with the Pharisees again at the end. The man is given spiritual sight. Jesus comes back to the Pharisees now, or rather they come back to him and they say, "Are we blind too?" In verse 41, Jesus says, "If you were blind, you would not be guilty of sin. But now that you claim you can see, your guilt remains." The Pharisees' problem is that they're blind and they don't know it and won't admit it. They're too self-righteous. They're too proud. They're too arrogant. They don't like the sunlight coming into the room because it exposes their flaws. And so they pull the covers over their eyes so that it can hide their flaws. They love themselves too much. They are worshipers of themselves. And so Jesus comes and he says, "I'm the light of the world. I blind the seeing and I give sight to the blind." And so which are you? Are you the blind man? Poor, humble, ragged, and yet utterly willing to believe in Jesus so that he can lift your blindness? Or are you the Pharisees? Proud, arrogant, self-righteous, pulling the covers over your eyes to shield them from the light that exposes your sin, refusing to come to Jesus that he might give you spiritual sight. And the test is, do you worship Jesus from the heart? Does your heart respond to Jesus like the heart responds to the Grand Canyon? Or is your heart ultimately cold and unfeeling because you have no sight to see the beauty that is in front of you? I'll close with one illustration and an exhortation for those of us who have been given spiritual sight. A few years ago, I decided to get LASIK. I was never blind, of course, but I had lots of eye problems. I would get all kinds of infections and irritations. They caused me endless problems. And so finally, we thought, this is worth it to just pay the fee up front, get rid of all contacts and glasses, get rid of eye problems, and just be done with it. And so for years, I had, like many people, had gone through my life just putting contacts in at night, take them out, put on my glasses, wake up in the morning, I can't really see anything till I reach over, fumble around, find my glasses, put them on, and then it's amazing, I put them on and I can see. And this was just life that I had lived with forever. I didn't know there was anything better. But then I went in for LASIK, and to this day, I couldn't tell you what they did. All I know is I laid on a table, and this giant machine came and covered my eyes. And 10 minutes later, it lifted up from my face, and the doctor said, "All right, sit up and open your eyes now." And so I sat up and opened my eyes. I could barely open them, but I remember just kind of squinting and looking around and just muttering the words, "I can see." And for the first time in years, my eyes weren't blurry, but I had perfect 20/20 vision. And so for weeks after that, it was like all I could talk about. I'm sure people who knew me got tired of it. But I was like, "Hey, did you know I got LASIK? This was the most amazing thing. I went in and they just fixed my eyes and now I can see. Like that, look at that tree over there. I can see that. I don't have contacts in or glasses. It's amazing. Look how distinct those lines are. My vision's so clear." Have you heard about LASIK? Have you thought about getting it yourself? It's amazing. You should consider it. For those of us who have been given spiritual sight by Jesus, that ought to be our response. You can't help but go tell someone. The man was blind, but now he sees. If you are in Christ, that is your story. And now what can you do but go and tell others? And so may we be a people that are so moved by what God has done for us that we cannot help but go tell others that they might receive spiritual sight too. You've been listening to a sermon from Haven Heights Baptist Church in Wauseon. If you're looking for a church home, we'd love for you to join us. We gather on Sunday mornings at 10:30 a.m. For more information about our church, go to havenheightsbaptist.org or find us on Facebook.